The Colliers Cathedral.
Mother always said she fell for Jacob Lender because of his whistling. It was at Collerton's May dance when they were at England. She were no mean exponent of the art herself, and had won first prize, an engraved coal scuttle, 2 whippet muzzles and 14 pound of black pudding in the Collerton Ladies Open Hymn Whistling Competition. Heard over the sea that her little brown children were a treat by all accounts. Jacob Lender took the supreme title that year. Yorkshire's Mr. Whistle he were, King of the Dales. His version of Ilkley Moor Bartak had the judges in tears, and many an elderly lady in the audience come over red-faced during his vibrato passage. It were only natural for these 2 nightingales to come together. But soon after they were married, Mother realised that whistling was just about the only quality in Jacob Lender to admire. Their marriage was not a happy one. They had little in common and shared few interests. But Mother bore his 7 children stoically, by which time the King of the Dales, his sceptre now limp, his orb now withered, presented a right royal sorry sight. The heart went out of him, and his once proud whistle gave way to wind and puff. Jacob was an uneducated, unwashed alcoholic, with the manners of a wild beast, not too dissimilar from most of the blackened creatures with whom he shared the long daily descent into the bowels of Collerton Pit. Much of daily life at that time remains in the recesses of my recollection. One event, however, I remember only too well.
Oh, that's nice. A visitor.
Morning, Mrs. Lender.
Oh, Joe Prusak. I've not been expecting to see you. Not with such a long face, any road. What's the matter?
I'm afraid I've come with some news. There's been an accident. It were a build-up of gas.
Oh, God, no. Were any of the pit ponies hurt?
Aye, Mrs. 4 was killed outright.
Oh. And Jacob?
He wasn't all. The rescue team went down as soon as they'd finished their tea, but everything was blown to smithereens.
Oh, those poor pit ponies. Did they find Jacob?
All that was left was his snack box and sandwiches. Very tasty they were, too.
I'm glad. Shame to waste good food.
Me and the lads have had a bit of a whip round. We've been needing every penny now the master's gone. There'll be a shilling a week from the union, and maybe old Grimley, the pit owner, will help out. He's away in York for the day. Gone to watch a hanging.
Well, we'll get nothing from that miser.
Happen you're right. I'd like to think that me and the missus could help you out a bit. We'd hate to see you thrown out on the street.
Oh, we'll get by somehow.
Well, Mrs. Prusak and I could probably find 6 pence a week to help tide you over. You wouldn't have to see it as charity. I know you're too proud for that. I think you could come along to the cottage just 5 or 6 evenings a week and cook us a meal. And then get the coal in and make the bed. Maybe look after the kids of a night while Mrs. Prusak and I go
well,
out.
Well, Joe,
no need to thank me, Mrs. Lender. There's the scullery could be scrubbed.
Joe!
And that back shed could do with a coat of creosote.
Joe! Thank you for your concern, but you'd best be going.
Well, right you are. But don't forget, we'll not stand by and watch you starve. Not while there are slates on the house roof to be repaired. How'd you cope up ladders?
Even now I can distinctly recall the shiver that ran down my spine. I looked to my mother. She sat, head in hands, having just counted the contents of the small leather purse that represented the collective opinion my father's workmates had of him.
1 and 2 pence. 1 shilling and rotten 2 pence. It won't even buy me a new hat. Well, I suppose there'll be some folks who want to come back after the service. That'll mean tea and 3 pennies of cooked ham. I'd better ask Mrs. next door for some borrowed cups. Oh, Sam, you may only be 8 years old.
But... I'm 15, ma'am.
Are you? Which one's 8, then?
That's our Effie.
No. I'm sure Effie's 6.
No, Effie's 8. It's Betty who's 6. Thomas and Ashley are 7. Flo's 5.
And dear little Jack is just 1. Isn't he?
How come there's such a big gap between me and the rest, ma'am?
Your father used to work nights.
Oh.
But, Sam, He won't be coming home anymore.
Hey, that's wonderful news, ma'am.
God wanted your father to live with him in heaven.
Oh, there were lots of people who didn't even want my dad living near them in Collerton.
Son, I hope you're old enough to be spoken to in a grown-up way. Your father has been killed.
Snuffed it, you mean?
Snuffed it, son.
Kick the bucket?
Kick the bucket.
Shed his mortal coil?
Indeed, he has.
Right. I'm off down Lamb and Flag for a couple of pints.
All right, son. I'll have your tea on the table when you get back.
Our now fatherless Lender family were to know suffering in its purest form over the next weeks, months and years. Penury became our collective bedfellow. Mother worked all the hours that God sent to keep us in gruel and rags. The neighbours, so used to threadbare struggling, closed ranks and helped where they could. All the street brought washing to my mother's door, and occasionally some of them paid her. But through all these vicissitudes, we remained a close-knit family.
Happy birthday, dear Samuel. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, look at you, Sam. Almost a grown man. I don't know, 12 years old. And
I'm 16, ma'am.
Now, all the family is here, Sam.
Claire's not here, ma'am.
You button it, girl, and don't butt in when I'm talking. Now, Sam, we've got this little surprise to give you. Here you are.
Oh.
Open it.
Hey, Mama, new sock. Oh, you shouldn't have it. It must have cut the earth. I'll put it on my right foot now. Oh, there.
Oh.
And then tomorrow I can swap it to my left foot. Oh, what a swell the lads will think me. Me, with a sock of me very own.
The man in the shop put the match by for me. And maybe, if things go well, I can get you the other one next year.
By heck, Mama, a pair of socks. I can hardly imagine. Mum, I've got an idea. Now that I'm 16...
Are you really as old as that?
Yes, Mum. And I think it's time I found myself a job. Now that I've got a sock and everything, I'm almost a man. I've put a lot of thought into it, Mum. And I think I'll be a writer.
What?
Or a musician. I've a great idea for a first novel. It's about this gypsy girl who falls in love with a lord who's always sniffing lilies and whittling wood.
What?
Or I might get myself a cheap cello and with a bit of practice...
A writer? A musician? Nay, lad, you'll go down the pit, Lord Jacob.
Oh, a minor. But, Mother, I...
Oh, who the devil can that be?
Quiet, you lot!
Oh, Joe Cusack. Hello. I'm not going to repoint your chimney stack for anything less than £5, if that's what you're ailed about. I told you before.
I'm afraid I've come with some news, Mrs. It's about your Flo.
About my what?
Flo.
She's your daughter.
Oh, yes.
There's been an accident.
What kind of accident?
A wet one. Sam, you'd best make your mother a cup of tea.
Right, right.
Flo was down at the canal. Some driftwood came by. She tried to pull it out. Whether it were a bit of curiosity or whether she wanted to bring the log home to provide the family with some warmth this evening, we'll never know. In any event, it were a damn silly trick because she leaned over too far, fell in and went down like a brick.
It must have been all the newspaper she had wrapped round her. I couldn't afford to buy her proper clothes, not with having to fork out on the stock for Sam. There was 3 weeks' worth of the Collerton Bugle round her.
Oh, she wouldn't have stood much of a chance then. Oh, not with the weight of that lot pulling her down. Still, could have been worse.
How?
What?
How could falling in a filthy canal, sinking like a stone and drowning, be any worse?
Well, I can tell you're upset, missy. A thing like this is bound to get you down a bit, so I'd best be on my way.
Well... Thanks for bringing us the news, Joe.
Oh, my pleasure. If I can do somebody a good turn, that's my motto. Now, while I'm here, what about this chimney?
£5, not a penny less.
You'll shinny up that drain pipe and have the job done in a morning. £3.
£4.10.
Just for a bit of pointing.
£4.10, and I'll put new flashing in and re-lead the gully for you.
£4.
I'll be along in the morning.
Cheery bye, then.
Oh, dear, ma'am. That's some terrible news.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't expecting him to pay £4, to be honest.
I mean about our little Flo.
Oh, that. Yes, dreadful blow. I'm overwrought with grief. How much more can a woman be expected to take? When I think of that young life, those little blue eyes and those golden locks, can there really be a God?
Effie's the one with blue eyes and golden locks, ma'am.
Which one was stolen?
You know, she had the leg.
Oh, that one. I very nearly bought her a new shoe last week, too. Imagine the waste if I had.
Life must go on, ma'am.
Life must go on,
sir. What's up for tea, ma'am?
You and dumplings.
Can I have Flo's dumpling, ma'am?
With your halves on it.
Only 6 weeks later, with Flo barely dried out in her grave, young Ashley was out one morning collecting dock for his rabbit. The boy came upon some mushrooms under the boughs of Jarman's oak. Having eaten nothing solid for 2 days, Ashley succumbed to temptation and ate his fill. That afternoon, he fell violently sick, and it was not much later that the spark of life left him. Mother was so overcome that reason left her. Taking our wood axe, she set off for Jarman's oak. She leapfrogged the dry stone wall, vaulted the wire fence down to the cutting, scrambled up the far bank and through Mr. and Mrs. Bletchley's back garden, went over the midden and arrived at the tree in 2 minutes and 47 seconds, an unbeaten record for the locality to this day. Mother was a canny woman, but she'd not had much experience of lumberjacking. She sank the axe into Jarman's oak with a terrifying fury, and it fell on her. I ran for help. Men came with ropes, block and tackle gear, bottles of brown ale, and by nightfall, Mother was lying in the pauper's wing of Colton Infirmary. I put my ear to her lips to catch the faint word she was mouthing. "Listen, son," she began. "There's no food in the pantry, but there is Ashley's rabbit."
"Effie! Thomas! Come and help us with the supper."
"Supper? But it's only Tuesday."
"You peel that potato for us, Thomas, and Effie, you skin the rabbit. I'll stoke up the fire. Oh, heck, we've got no coal. The furniture will have to go."
"Oh, but Sam, there's only the bed left. We burned the table when young Jack got frozen to the door. Had to be thawed out quick."
"There's nowt else for it. From now on, we'll have to sleep standing." Who's that? Hello?
"Hello, boy. I'd like to speak with your mother."
"Mam's had an accident."
"Oh, dear me. I hope that she will not be incapacitated for a period that might be described as prolonged."
"Physic hasn't said, Mr.
Crudley, young sir. Josiah Crudley. I've come on a delicate matter, sir. Perhaps best discussed indoors."
"Oh, you'd best come in."
"Right.
I can't offer you a seat. There aren't any, but why don't you stand over by the window? The view's better."
"I am here on behalf of the Right Honourable Sir George Melson Shirley, in whose employ I have the pleasure to be, and in whose house you have the pleasure to live for the moment. It has come to his notice that the rent on this salubrious residence has not been paid for 2 weeks. So, if you will furnish me with the sum outstanding, plus interest, namely 2 shillings and 4 pence...
"But we don't have that kind of money."
"Then start packing."
"But, sir, there's little Tom. He's got a chest, and Betty, she's had a bilious attack through the holes in her vest. If you throw us out, we'll all die."
"I don't see that there's any way I can. Oh, look. Is that a rabbit over there? Mrs. Crudley is very fond of a rabbit. I could probably give you a day or two for it."
"Effie, give Mr. Crudley the rabbit."
"But, Sam, we're all starving."
"It is better to starve with pride than to have a full belly and no self-respect."
"I don't think so. What do you reckon, Thomas?"
"I go for the full belly every time."
"Here, Mr. Crudley, take the rabbit and leave us." "But before you go, think on this. There comes a day when blood-blooded leeches like Sir George Melson Shirley and servile lap-lackeys like you will be trodden underfoot by those you now walk over. But working men shall rise and build a soaring cathedral out of coal. Think on, Crudley. Think on."
"Cathedral out of coal? If you've been eating those mushrooms, remember what happened to your brother."
"Sam, does this mean the workhouse for us?"
"Oh, let's eat supper. There's still a potato and a carrot. And then I fear I must go and burden Mother with another problem." "You're looking better today, Mother. And whistling, too. Almost like yourself again. What have the physics said?"
"Oh, the news is good. You remember last week they thought I was going to die."
"Aye."
"Well, now they think I'll only be paralyzed from the neck down."
"Oh, Mother."
"Hey, lad, I thought you'd be pleased. Don't you want me to come home?"
Josiah Crudley come round tonight.
That wimp. I could eat him for breakfast.
He said we owed 2 weeks. And if he didn't pay by tomorrow, we'll all be thrown out on the street.
Oh, that it should have come to this. Sam, find me a sheet of paper and a pen.
Right.
I've never bothered him before, but there's no option this time.
Who is it you're writing to?
Mr. Grimley.
The pit owner? But why?
There's something that happened a long time ago. Now, when I finish this letter, you must take it up to the big house and be sure to give it to Grimley himself. Now, put the pen in my mouth and hold the paper steady.
By reputation, Augustus Grimley were a hard-hearted, cruel taskmaster. He'd inherited the pit from his father, who'd once horsewhipped the rector for choosing Blessed are the Poor as his text. Clutching the mysterious letter in a hand that would not stop shaking, I arrived at the black, wrought-iron gates of Collerton Lodge. The Grimley family, for the pit owner had a prim wife and a daughter who few townsfolk had ever seen, sat in the breakfast room quite unaware of the small, ragged figure now making his uncertain way up the winding drive.
Good morning,
Mama. Good morning,
Mama. Come on. I'm sorry I'm a little late down to breakfast. It was that stupid servant of mine.
Mm. We may have to do something about Deirdre, I fear. Much as I'm fond of her, the old Tinkerbell. She still looks sweet in that penny and mop cap. But she's slowed down lately, hasn't she?
Well, today, she overheated the ass's milk so that my poor big toe was painfully scalded as I got into the bath.
What? My own daughter crippled for life due to the negligence of a mentally deficient lackey? I'll speak with the imbecile forthwith.
You rang, sir.
Wickens, sir. What do you know about my daughter's maid, servant?
Desmond Turvey, do you mean, sir, or Deirdre, as he's known? He used to be maid to your mother, sir, been with us 30 years or more.
Send her, or him, or it to me.
Immediately, sir.
This pert creature must be given a sound reproach.
Sound reproach? She shall be given a notice. I'll tell him now. Enter!
You have to see me, sir. I'm sorry I was slow, but my old limbs don't move as well as they once did. What with my feet and these heels, and you know, sir, it's bitter below stairs these mornings. Talk about chilly willy, as a friend of mine used to say. I'm wearing my winter ones, but what with these stairs, it all rides up before you know where you are. And
Turvey, you've been with us a long time.
Oh, dear me, yes, sir. I remember you being born. Wrinkled little prune you were, too. Yes, sir, I've been trotting about the lodge for years. One of the fittings I am.
Well, you're not one anymore. Pack your bags and get out before I take a horsewhip to you.
Oh, she swooned. Wickens, fetch the smelling salt.
Smelling salt be damned. Go for the sack truck, Wickens, and wheel this painted baggage out of my house.
Yes, sir.
Blast the inconsiderate servants. Tune in before we've eaten breakfast.
Now, just cold meat, kidneys, kippers, potatoes, tomatoes. A pheasant if you like.
A pheasant sounds good.
How many would you like?
Oh, just two. I'm in poor appetite. Thank you, my pleasure. You know, that curvy woman is typical of the working classes. They have no moral fibre. They are greedy, avaricious, concerned only with self-gain.
Oh, pheasant, dear.
Oh, there's a small one there. And they're not God-fearing as we are.
Well, sometimes I talk with the miners, and they seem quite nice.
You talk to them?
Sometimes. And they never seem to complain about their lot, and their lot must be pretty hard.
Irma, my sugar sweet bonbon, do you know what I pay those good-for-nothing scrimshankers? With overtime, any one of them can take home 2 shillings a week.
Well, I spend more than that on silk stockings.
Irma, I must have ladies' naughty things spoken about at this table, thank you.
No, you forget, my dear, the lower classes are a separate measure of mortal. They'll consider the digestive system, for example.
I trust you're not about to be coarse, husband.
No, dearest, only scientific. Now, take this breakfast. A worker would find this fare too rich by far. The artisan must be fed on root vegetables. Lean meat is the very devil for him.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, Wiki.
There's a boy at the door who is most insistent upon seeing you.
Kick him down the stairs.
I have already, sir.
And?
He climbed them once again, sir.
Well, I trust you had the presence of mind to repeat the action.
Oh, indeed, sir.
He sounds an impudent scoundrel. Is he big?
Very small, sir.
Is he armed?
No, sir.
Has he got sharp teeth?
I did not notice, sir.
Then we'd best be careful. And be over my 12 more.
Sir. here you are, now, sir.
When I say now, throw open the door so I can send the madman on his way with a hot blast of shut up his ragged arse.
Very good, sir.
Right with... Now! You villain! What do you mean by knocking up my door?
I've got something for you, sir.
And I've got something for you, my lad.
It's a letter, sir.
Ready?
It's addressed to you.
Take him.
From Lottie Lender, me mother.
You'd best come into the library.
My word, sir. I've never seen so many books.
Let's see the letter.
Here it is, sir.
So, your family has fallen on hard times since Jacob Lender got himself buried alive.
Yes, sir. Last night we finished off the stewed hearth rug. Now there's only me sock left.
Well, wait here for a few minutes. I'll write a note that'll see you're taken on as a pit starting tomorrow.
May I look at the books while you're gone, sir?
Aye. But keep your snotty fingers up.
Oh, what a wonderful collection. The Diary of Samuel Pepys. The complete work for William Shakespeare. Ben Johnston, his plays. Faustus, by Christopher Marlowe. Six Sonnets. Oh, such words.
What did you do? Is that it?
Hello, miss. I'm waiting for Mr. Grimley to give me a letter.
What letter?
I'm to be taken on at Pitt.
I see you're looking at the book. Are you interested?
Oh, aye. I love reading.
I didn't know common working people like you were intelligent enough to read. I thought you spent every available moment eating root vegetables, crossing small beer, and forgetting miserable ways.
Well, I'd rather have a good book any day of the week. I'd give anything for a collection like this.
Oh, you've been looking at all the dry, dreary stuff. I'll show you something far more enjoyable. This is my favourite. The Human Anatomy.
Is it a good read?
I never read it. But look at the picture.
Oh, dear God. It's a woman, I think.
Haven't you seen a naked woman before?
Well, you don't find naked women round our way. We're Methodists.
You find this exciting?
Depends who's preaching.
I mean the sight of a naked woman. Look. See her breath.
I thought as much.
Do you know what this is?
Oh, I'm sure people don't have those down our road. I've never seen a bloke without his cap before.
Oh, I don't think nakedness should shock. We're all the same under our clothes, aren't we?
Well, not quite. That bloke's got smaller ears than me.
Would you mind if I took all my clothes off here and now?
Well,
have you ever known a woman?
I know lots of them.
But have you been with one?
Been where? Yeah. If your dad comes back and sees you pressing me up against the complete work for William Faithfield with your chest and all, that would be trouble.
We could meet somewhere soon. I'll bring this book and we can compare notes.
Oh,
Herman.
Are you up to something?
Yes, Daddy. Just have to wait for the moment. Goodbye, Mr.
Sam. Sam Lender.
Bye, Sam.
Well, here's the letter. You start first shift tomorrow. And, here's five bob. Just to tie things over. Now, don't you dare breathe a word of this to anyone, or I'll have half mile queues up the drive all after handouts. On your way now.
Leaving the lodge, my head was filled with a multitude of unanswered questions. Why had Grimley been so helpful? What had my mother written in her letter? If I'd had another 5 minutes alone with Irma, would I have developed a permanent stoop? And what lay in store for me the following day? Me first down the pit.
That's a fine whistle you got on your sonny. What are you doing here?
I'm looking for Foreman, mister.
Jack Cratch. Over in office.
All right. Hello. Come in.
Hello, sir. Are you Jack Cratch?
Yes, lad. That's my name.
Mr. Grimley sent me.
He said you'd be coming, so I'm not surprised to see you. Have you been down his pit?
No, but my father, Jacob Lender, would have called you.
Then you must be his son. I knew your father until he was killed. Then we stopped seeing each other. I hated him. Smelt like a sewer. One hell of a whistler, mind. Now, you'll be needing a pick and a shovel. They'll cost you 15 bob.
How much will my wages be?
1 shilling 9 pence a week. Unless the roof comes down on you. In which case, you'll earn a reputation for being lucky if you get out. And a certain amount of sympathy if you don't. Come on. Into the cave and we'll go below. Get up off floor, lad. I told you to brace your legs. We'll crawl to the sea. It's only about 10 miles.
I were given a stretch of seam to work in that were only 4 inches high. After a few days, I became proficient at scraping out coal with my fingernails. But the best part of the day was the return to daylight and Irma Grimley, who had taken to meeting me on the canal path.
Mum! What brings you this way today?
Oh, I always walk this way. Well, you know my girl.
And what makes you think I'm your girl? How's your mother?
Oh, much better. She's got a job.
I thought she was paralysed.
Well, she is, but she licks envelopes for the union. 6 pence a gross and 1.5 on Sundays.
That's terrible.
Oh, it's the going rate. The only thing is, it's beginning to affect her speech.
You all work so hard, and I can't even tie my own shoelace.
Oh, can't you? I'll show you how. Sit down there and let me take your shoes off.
Oh, Sam. What if somebody sees us?
Oh, go on. No one ever comes along this path.
Who will? All right, then, Sam.
Now, give us your foot.
Oh, Sam. That tickles. It's tickling me. Stop.
Got you now, my girl. Tickle, tickle on the foot. You want
it? Sam, no. Stop.
Hey, go on.
Oh, Sam, stop it. I can't stand it anymore.
Who's that shouting?
It must be someone who thinks we're up to no good.
Oh, you're right. Quick, put your shoes on. We'll make a dash for it.
Just a moment. There.
Oh, Irma, dear, have you hurt yourself?
Oh, I sprained the ankle. Oh. But, Dan, he called me dear.
Well, that's because you are dear to me, Irma.
Oh, and you're dear to me, Sam.
Samuel, Linda, with my Irma.
Father!
This is monstrous. How long have you been leading my daughter up the canal path like this?
Father, it's not what it may seem.
I saw you being forced to the ground by this villain.
Oh, it's all perfectly innocent, Mr. Grimley.
Oh, you call ravaging my daughter innocent?
I wasn't being ravaged, Father.
How dare you use words like that, girl?
Look, please allow me to explain.
No, I've heard enough. Now, you listen to me, Linda. I'll see to it you are ripped into small pieces by dogs, burned to a cinder, disemboweled, and then thrown into jail to rot.
Oh, Father, I love him.
What?
It's true, I love him.
And I love Irma.
What?
Irma and I love each other.
It is true, Irma.
Yes, Father. Sam and I are in love.
With each other?
Well, yes, sir. We're in love with each other.
Both of us.
Well, I can't believe my ears.
Love cannot be locked away, sir. It will not lie latent nor covert. If I am sent to jail, I shall break free and fly to the woman I love.
What?
You, Irma, my dear.
Oh. What if you're burned and disemboweled, my love?
Well, it might slow me down a bit.
Oh, this is serious.
Father, we are quite serious.
You may be certain that we are as serious as any two people who have been ensnared in love's joyous trap.
And that's what I think too, Dad.
Oh, this is serious.
Indeed, sir, if ever in the history of humankind...
Oh, shut up, Linda. You're worse than the wife. When I say this is serious, you cannot begin to comprehend the depth of meaning that lurks beneath the words. Linda... Do you remember when you come to me with a letter from your mother?
Aye.
That was the first time I'd heard from her since we were mere children, as you are now. I lived up at the lodge with my father, and Lottie, your mother, was the finest young creature in the county. I met her at the May Day dance. She tied strings around my heart like the ribbons about the maypole. In no time at all, we were besotted. But I came from the big house, and she came from the Collier's Terrace. And when Lottie found herself with child, my father sent her away and paid Jacob Lender £5 to marry her.
You mean you were my father?
Yes, Tom. But Irma, Irma is your half-sister.
To this day, I can't remember the hours that followed. I have misty, half-formed impressions of running, stumbling, and somehow I stumbled 300 miles to arrive in the Cotswold Hills far to the south. Eh, what a prospect I must have presented to old Joss Wotton when he found me in a ditch on that cold morning.
Hello? What can that pile of rags be down in that ditch? By my life, it's a pile of rags what's wearing boots.
Oh.
Swap my goodness, a pile of rags that's wearing boots and groans.
Oh, leave me alone to die.
Leave you alone today, but you might be gone tomorrow. Ring my fetlocks. Are you a criminal? Where do you come from?
Yorkshire.
Then you are a criminal.
Well, where am I?
You're in a ditch. You might not stay there and be healthy long. Come back home for breakfast.
Can you give me a hand?
I was thinking we'd have egg and bacon. Can you walk?
Yes.
So can I. Learned when I was a nipper.
Gee, what a smashing cottage. And there's a fine fire you've got in our.
That's where I always keep it. Are you a religious man?
Why do you ask?
I'm an archbishop. I decided on it last Sunday. The vicar waited for me after church to say I sang too loud in the hymns. So I thought, sod him. I'll form a rival church. I called it the Cotswold Order of Evangelic Knights. C of E for short. Would you like to join? It's a good crack. I have services on Sundays and Wednesdays, and I go visiting every day.
The elderly and infirmed?
Whoever happens to be in the Cooper's Arms. Look, I tell you what. If you join my church, you could be an archbishop as well.
After the shock I'd been through, I needed something that would reintroduce meaning into my life. So I became an archbishop. Irma's memory were my companion in many a quiet moment, and whenever I saw a well-upholstered chaise long with cabriolet legs. Throwing all my enthusiasm into the duties of an archbishop, I managed to gain another convert, Beryl Crouch, cast-off sweetheart of the village idiot. She would sit with me as Joss preached from the coal bucket that served as a makeshift pulpit in the front room of his cottage.
Brother and sister, lift up your knees. Now, lift up your arms and see how long you can balance on the bony bit of your bum before you fall off the bench. Oh, bad luck, Beryl. Sam wins again. Now, what do we learn from this?
Look how the mighty have fallen.
What do you reckon, Beryl?
I reckon I'll have a nasty bruise on my elbow tomorrow.
Exactly. Now, consider the daffs. How they do grow. How do they grow? Well, first you need a bit of earth. Then you put the daffs in, and then they do grow. And 'tis far better that a man should sell his soul than be seen darkly through the eye of a camel.
Hallelujah!
What's that, Beryl?
Nothing.
Finally, I'd like to begin with a few words. Sometimes in life, we have to stop and ask ourselves, what's the point? What do you reckon, Sam?
God knows.
Good point, Sam. Good point. Beryl, put the kettle on, girl.
All right.
Now, the other day, I needed some wattling daub, and I was told it had gone up by a penny a ton. I said to old Jeremiah Lexie, what do you think I am, made of money? And he said, no. So I said, well, what about this penny on a ton of daub? And he walked off. Still, as he's the milkman, I suppose it's nothing to do with him anyway. Right. Well, I think that's about the end of the sermon. Unless any member of the congregation's got anything to add?
Jeremiah Lexie. Golly, here it's back. I've never seen on a man.
Praise the Lord. Sam?
I will just say this. Today, we gather here in these humble surroundings, members of a small, though purposeful sect.
What's that?
He said sect, girl. Don't you get excited yourself, or your trouble will come back.
There may be those who chide us, who consider us strange fruit, ripe for ridicule. But does that daunt us? Well, does it?
What do you reckon, Darrell?
Well, only a bit, perhaps.
No, of course it does not daunt us. For we share a purpose, a mission, a vision. We are clad in steel complete.
My, oh my, you know some words, boy.
And from our now meagre foundations, there shall rise a glorious edifice. The aspirations of good men and women shall find concrete expression when together we build our magnificent monument, a cathedral fashioned from coal.
And so my life as an archbishop might have continued in its undemanding way had it not been for a chance meeting in the public bar of the Cooper's Arms.
3 pints of your finest foaming ale, landlord. Beryl, what are you going to have?
I'll have 3 pints, too, thanks, Job.
Sam?
Same for me.
Hello, my dear. Who's got a gross in here full of big Bertha's ballads? Big Bertha's back. Bucks and Bertha, Bristol's funniest ballad here.
Why, what a large lady. Can she play that accordion?
That's no accordion, boy. You look again. Balladeer she is. Comes by every now and then with news about some disaster or other. Got a bigger mouth than the River Severn, she has.
You grow, don't be miserable. Let me, Bertha, brighten up your meagre lovey's little ballad.
That's right.
Everyone a gem. Come on, give us a groan.
What would I get for us, Johnny, Bertha?
Now, who's going to drop a coin down me doing Sue the ballad of Colleton Pitt?
Colleton Pitt?
Here, Balladeer, what do you know about Colleton?
Oh, now you look like a man of substance, sir. I like the cut of your jib. In fact, you got the best cut jib Big Brother's clapped her eyes on all day. Come on, give us a snack.
No, what do you know about Colleton?
Good tanner's worth.
Oh, where's your money? Now, tell me.
All right, no need to rush. I'm an artist. I am. You get your full 6 tanner. In fact, for another tanner, you can have a go bob's worth.
No, please, just tell me about Colleton. It's me home.
Right. I'll clear me cubes. It is a sorry and a woeful tale that I have come to tell. 500 dead in Colleton, and many hurt as well.
500 dead? Oh, please, just tell me what happened.
Don't interrupt.
But it sounds terrible.
Well, what do you expect for a tanner? The morning shift descended. It was black as night. Before the shift had ended, there came a dreadful sight.
Oh.
An awful and a thunderous crash to tear the ground asunder. It was like as not. It was due to gas. Hard lines on those down under. The ground had opened such a rift that may be known to man. 500 from the morning shift. All went straight down the path.
I can't stand it anymore. Tell me what's happened in plain speech.
You shut your mouth. I'm warming up now, forsooth. And even more terrible.
Well, tell me quickly the old story.
Look, I'm a balladeer. Are you sick ballads? That's my job. You can't shut up and listen, I'm off.
Oh, come back and tell me your common lump of pig fat.
Oh, common? Caught that scum.
Blimey. Poor old Sam caught that uppercut right in the cassock. Oh, speak up, Sam. Are you still in the land of the living, boy? Yes, it must have been like being hit with a freezing. Beryl, get some cold water. Come on, Sam. Come on, boy. Wake up. Ah, here, Beryl, have you fetched that bucket?
I hear it, yes.
Here, chuck it over, Sam.
Oh, Joss, I'm going home.
I arrived in Colleton just before dusk on a dank autumn evening to be met by a scene of utter devastation and the threadbare figure of Wickens, Grimley's erstwhile butler.
What manner of disaster struck here?
Oh, there was a terrible explosion below. It was like an earthquake or the Day of Judgment. 1 minute, a row of houses, children playing in the streets, racing pigeons fluttering in the lofts, whippets barking. Next moment, all gone. Soon after that, Augustus Grimley went mad. He killed his wife with a meat cleaver. Nobody knew why. I suppose it was the first thing that came to hand. Then, he drowned himself in a dish of gruel. Strapped his head to the bowl with his trouser belt. They found him
face down.
Oh, what happened to Irma?
She, still up at the lodge, lives like a recluse, never comes out.
I shall go to her.
Irma? Irma? It's Samuel, Lender. I've come to see you.
Who's
there? It's me, Irma. Sam.
Oh, I can't believe it. I never thought I'd see you again. Oh, Sam. You heard about the disaster. Your whole family. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry about your mother and father, too.
My mother and father? Oh, of course. You don't know.
I heard that your father went mad after the accident.
No, it was Mother who went mad. She flew at Daddy saying that everyone in the country hated us because he was too mean to spend any money making the Pixie. You see, she wanted to be chairwoman of the Committee for Rehabilitation of Fallen Gentlewomen. And she knew that after the accident, nobody would vote for her.
But why did your father kill her?
Because, Sam, he wasn't my father.
What?
In her fury, Mummy told Grimley that he wasn't my real father. While he was down at the pit all hours, making sure none of the men cheated him out of the penny piece, one of the Brighter boys was up here at the lodge, screwing a handsome bonus out of the firm.
Do you realize what this means?
Yes, Sam, I do.
If Jacob Lender weren't my real father, and your father, or rather Augustus Grimley, were...
And all the time my father, or the man I called father, was not my father.
We're not brother and sister. Oh, Irma, if only I had some money, we could be married.
You're Augustus Grimley's only heir. But this house is yours. The estate is yours. What's left of Cullerton Pit is yours. You are a very wealthy young man.
Oh, wealthy? Me?
You don't seem very pleased.
Oh, Irma, I cannot forget my people. They're all gone.
Now you're rich, you can use the money to help those who are left.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea. There's so much to be done. Come on, let's go straight away and gather the people of Cullerton together.
A friend, hear me, please. I've come to tell you that I am now the owner of Cullerton. The estate, the pit, everything.
What are you talking about, sir?
It'll take too long to tell you how, but I am the only heir of Augustus Grimley. You are my people. I will not let you down. I shall do all I can to improve your lives. I shall sell everything. Irma and I will marry and live modestly.
Congratulations!
The wealth that I have will be used to better your lives. No man, no woman, no child shall want. It shall be comfort for all. I shall spend every penny of my money and build for us all a vast, soaring cathedral from coal.
Oh, what?
It'll be a fitting memorial to the suffering of the working class. My cathedral will stand forever, a new wonder of the world, a sight to strike awe into the heart of every working man. Turn your thoughts to the collective soul of the proletariat and turn your muscles to the task ahead. A cathedral in coal!
I know what I'm going to turn my muscles to.
Let's get them, my bastard!
Ah, well. The idea for the cathedral made out of coal had to go. The people didn't want it. Irma and I had to go as well. They didn't want us either. So we moved to the West Indies, bought a cotton plantation, 900 slaves, few thousand acres, and a fine big house.
Well, there's a minute or two till supper, dear, so I'll just pop out and manacle down slaves for the night.
But, dear, you've only just come in from burying that chicken thief up to his neck in quicklime. Work, work, work. That's all you think about, just like your father.
One has certain responsibilities, my dear. Now, where's my lump hammer?
Oh, it's in the cupboard with the whips and the spike collar.
All right, Aura. Won't be long then, dear.
Dog bones?
Yes, mistress.
The master has just gone out for a few minutes.
Yes, mistress.
So we haven't got long. So come upstairs, quick.
Sure thing, mistress. I'm coming.
Now, I want you all standing to attention and no rattling those chains. I've a few things to say before you slope off your pits. Are you listening?
Yes, Master Linda Boy.
Point number one, spirituals, singing off. If only you miserable curs would put as much effort into your work as you do into those gospel songs, I'd be a wealthy man. But all I get is chorus after rousing chorus in four-part harmony and barely enough cotton to make a big man a small vest. So, until you up the work rate, there's no more singing on the firm's dime. Got it?
Yes,
I said got it?
Yes, Master!
Point number two, children, naming off. I'm fed up with the names you lurking layabouts give you a sprongs. I'm sick and tired of calling you people names like Dogbone, Chicken Jack, Leadbelly, and the rest. From now on, you give your brats good, honest, Protestant names like Daniel, Matthew, John, or Ruth, if it's a girl. But we don't want too many of those, all clear?
Yes, Master Lenderford!
Point number three, food thieving off. I found evidence tonight that someone had been in the food store. The food store, as you all know, is out of bounds. You, boy!
Yes, boy!
You keep your manacles still, boy, or you'll be in hot water.
Yes, boy!
As I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, the food store is out of bounds. I will not tolerate greed. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Master Linda Boy!
Just in case anyone has not quite got the message, I suggest he looks over at the barn door in the morning, and there he will see the felon skinned and nailed up. A little job for me after supper. Right, I'll say good night, you godless scum. Now, get into your kennels and don't let me hear another squeak.
Good night, Master Linda Boy!
Oh, you're back, dear.
Aye, and ravenous. You look a little red in the face again tonight, dear. Have you had something that disagrees with you?
Oh, no. Far from it. It's just rather warm.
Well, the wastrels are safely chained up for the night.
So you can relax for the evening.
There is another little job to do after supper.
What's that?
I have to skin one of them.
Oh, how tiresome.
I know, but the villain stole half a sweet potato from the food store, and if we allow that sort of thing to go unchecked, who knows where it might end?
Well, don't overexcite yourself, dear. It'll only make you doobie it, Twas.
Good evening, Masalena.
Yes, Dogbone. My goodness, you look even more hot and sweaty than usual.
There's a ragged boy at the door. Keep saying if he wants to see you.
Kick him down the stairs.
I have already, Master.
And?
He climbed right up again.
I trust you had the presence of mind to repeat the action.
Yes, Master.
Sounds an impudent scoundrel. Is he big?
No bigger than a weevil, boss.
Is he armed?
No, sir.
Well, has he got sharp teeth?
I didn't rightly notice, Master.
Then we'd best be careful. Give me over my 12-bore, Dogbone.
Here it is, sir.
When I say now, throw open the door so that I can send the madman on his way with a hot blast of shot up his ragged ass.
Yes, madam.
Right, Dogbone. Now! You villain! What do you mean by knocking at my door?
I've got something for you, boss.
And I've got something for you, laddie.
It's a letter, master.
Ready?
It's addressed to you.
Take aim.
It's from Liquid Stick, my mother.
You'd best come into the library.
In here with you, boy.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Now, boy, out with it. Tell me all.
My mother told me to come and see you if ever I was left alone in this world. I don't know why. Why? She used to say. If ever you're left alone in this life, go find Master Linda and tell him you're Licorice Stick's son.
Is Licorice Stick dead, boy?
Dead as meat, Master.
But she was such a fine figure of a lass. Healthy, strong, and she can't be so old. What happened?
Well, Master, Mama and me lived in a tin shack in the shanty with Grandma, Grandpappy, Mama's brother Jake, and a gray-haired old dog called Slooch. Uncle Jake was a pearl diver, a good one. 10 years ago, he was diving off the reef and he found a heart-shaped, rich red oyster shell. He had just long enough to glimpse what was inside, a jet black pearl the size of a cow's eye. Then he felt tentacles gripping his body. An evil guardian of a devil's squid had been watching over that black pearl. Uncle Jet cut and fought to free himself, and just before his lungs burst, he broke away. But in his struggle, he dropped the treasure. Soon as I was old enough, Uncle Jet taught me to dive. We said one day we'd find that black pearl, and we did, last week. Mama, Grandma, Grandpappy and all sleuths sat in the boat as Uncle Jake and I dived. The first time, nothing. The second, the third. But then we found a place, and Uncle Jake pulled out the heart-shaped oyster from out of the sand. I remember, he looked at me as he held up the shell. There was a kind of madness in his eyes. Then two great tentacles lashed round him and pulled him into the coral cave, and Jake was gone, taking the pearl with him. Back at the boat, I sobbed out the story. Grandpappy thought it was a shame, but Mama came over real crazy and jumped into the water, even though she couldn't swim. I was too weak to stop her. She didn't come up again.
Aye, she were always a game, lass, Willie Stick.
That night, down by the shore, old Sleuth was splashing in and out of the waves, just like he loved to do, and a killer whale ate him. I dreaded breaking that news to Grandpappy. He loved old Sleuth more than anything, but I never had to tell him. Grandma had forgotten to take out the mango pie out of the clay oven before they went to bed. And I can still remember the curls of blue smoke and the smell of burnt pastry. So you see, Master Linda, I'm all alone.
Aye, well, there's no point in being morose, lad. All you need's a job. Ever picked cotton before?
Master, I'll take your job for now, but for the future...
You'll be thinking about the prospects. Right, chip off the old block. You could make foreman in time if you keep your nose clean.
No, Master. You see, I have a destiny. It lies in a coral cave at the foot of the reef. One day I will dive again and find my pearl. Then I shall bring comfort to those who are oppressed, and our glorious pearl shall cry, "There yet is hope!" To every generation, then and you. For inspiration, meet to feed out, lowly, now, but waxing spirit shall in ecstasy, perpetual, rejoice and sing. When I have set my pearl within a shrine of marble pure, and placed the edifice deep in the hollow heart of Shantytown!
Aye, lad. You best be on your way for now.
Until the next time, Master Linda.
Another champion whistler. Another bloody cathedral. Until the next time.
That was The Collier's Cathedral by Robin Brooks, with John Strickland as Samuel Lender. Mrs. Lender was played by Hilda Schroeder, Effie by Helen Atkinson-Wood, and Thomas by Michael Jenner. Joe Trussett was played by Kai Panto, Rosanna Crudley by Jeffrey Collins, Irma Grimley by Moira Leslie, Mr. Grimley by Arnold Diamond, and Mrs. Grimley by Ellen McIntosh. Colin Starkey was Wickens, Michael Bilton, Turvey, Mark Rolston was Jack Cratch, Peter Tudnam was Joss Watton, Jane Wenham, Beryl, and Margot Boyd, Bertha the Balladeer. William Eagle played a miner, and William Hope, one of his mates. Louis Mahoney was Dogbone, Anthony Hall, the leader of the slaves, and Gary Beadle, the young Jamaican boy. The whistler was Lorne Gibson. The Collier's Cathedral was directed by David Johnston.